One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
It's time for another edition of Sound and Sarah's Vision. And as promised, I believe, Sarah, we're focusing on the American TV theme market for this episode.
We certainly are. By popular demand, everybody wanted America this week.
Sense, which is one of the reasons why we launched with the traditional classic Morton Stevens line from Hawaii Five-O, which of course has all manner of wondrous things going through the system. Were you ever a fan of Hawaii Five-O, or was it just a case of, no, it's on ITV, so I couldn't possibly watch it?
Oh, very much so. I loved, you know, Book 'em, Dano. I loved it. And I used to watch it with my dad. And it was one of those programmes for my generation where you'd have the gas fire on and then you've got Hawaii. And actually, due to that program, you know, you felt warm in dank, boring autumn here. I've always wanted to go to Hawaii, never been. Perhaps I'll get there one day. What about you, Alex? Did you watch it as a boy?
We should do a location report. Yes, I was quite a fan of Jack Lord, obviously the original incarnation of Steve McGarrett, because of course they did have a remade series with Alex McLaughlin, I think, who took it over again 10 seasons as opposed to the original 12 seasons that the original lost. And of course it did actually help the Hawaiian tourist industry and the film industry, because it was succeeded by Magnum PI. And I think American television have always had something that's going on in Hawaii since then. Lost the TV series. There's a new series of Magnum PI shooting now. Can you remember the name of the actor who portrayed Danny Williams, though?
Not off the top of my head.
James MacArthur. James MacArthur.
Oh.
Although, sadly, together with Cam Fong, who was Chin Ho Kelly, and Kono Zulu in the original four seasons of Hawaii Five-O, I think all of the original four members of the cast have actually passed on to the great layout in the sky, basically. So there we go. It just goes through. A very dynamic theme, of course, with a very dynamic spin round. And the hotel, of course, in which Jack Lord spins round in the opening credits, I think is still in existence and has benefited an awful lot, understandably, from tourists wanting to recreate that very iconic moment.
Oh, yes, and you can't, you know, how can you not feel energised?
That's why we launched with the programme tonight. We will be taking a slight step back now to Michael Brandon, who, of course, is it Michael Brandon? Michael Landon. I always get Landon and Brandon confused. The one who obviously was known to the world as being Little Joe in Bonanza, but in this particular incarnation, he was somebody completely different in an adaptation of a very famous series of novels that, of course, these days in the political correct times is deemed not acceptable. Little House on the Prairie.
Oh.
It's a great TV series. And did you actually enjoy Little House on the Prairie? What were your thoughts about it?
Oh, yes. And I used to like the very... There were the Ingalls, weren't they? They were the family, the main family. But then there was the horrible rich woman that owned the store that was really nasty, that always dressed in black dresses and had the spoiled daughter that went to the school. Yeah. No, the girls, it was a bit of a girly thing, actually, Little House on the Prairie, I think. But
Did you used to run up and down meadows in the joys of the Southeast, exactly?
Yes. Not really, not with the washing pole, no.
Just a thought. But I'm sure, as I say, we move on from Little House on the Prairie to something else, which inevitably, if you've never seen a single episode, you at least acknowledge the notion of everybody saying goodnight to everybody else, going on for an interminable length of time. Good night, Sarah. Good night, everybody. We should really finish off with this particular one, I suppose. In fact, we will. I'll hold back on that one. Let's just
hold back and see if people can guess what we're talking about.
Exactly.
In fact, did they not say, I'd say, good night, Alexius, and you'd say
good night, Sarah.
Sarah, and then there was a phrase actually. I think they said, "Was it good night, everybody?" At the end, I can't remember. I think it was. Yes.
Let's talk Dallas. series which effectively we were speaking to one of the stars of the latter episodes of Dallas, effectively, a wonderful actress called Lee Taylor Young, who portrayed one of the femme fatales who effectively manipulated JR in season 10. But this was a series that effectively, again, had a whole range of folk, including members of the Italia Conti agency, who refused to take any calls whatsoever on a Wednesday evening because they were locked into watching Dallas. Were you also, not that you went to Conti's, but were you also somebody who kind of felt that this was the series for yourself?
Oh, well, my parents were very into it, and JR and the different wives, and oh, probably you're not allowed to say the poison dwarf now, are we? And then, sorry, just so much we're not allowed
Charlene
to say.
Charlene Tilton was a fine soul. She was just then, obviously course, a little bit manipulative, that's all, and possibly of restricted height.
But my mum was really into it. And so therefore, and it was, I think younger people listening to this will realise there wasn't the option of things to watch as there are now. So you couldn't watch it at any time. So therefore, everyone was gripped to know what was going to happen in the next episode.
And then it was all a dream. You take a shower and it was all a dream.
And also, that was the time of everybody having massive shoulder pads in suits and things. And I remember I was rather chuffed. I did a Settlers commercial around about this time, and I had a suit on, and it was in a sort of peacock green suit with massive shoulder pads. And they let me buy it at the end of the shoot for half price. And I can remember thinking, gosh, this looks good. And I'm a bit of a poison dwarf. I'm very short. So it looked like I was a square walking around. Actually, I wore it to a wedding, but yes. And they all had the big hairstyles, didn't they? Because there was Joan Collins, and then there was...
Ah, no, you're confusing Dallas with Dynasty. Easily done. Joan Collins was Dynasty. Completely different. Dallas is JR.
JR is Dallas, isn't it?
Indeed. JR, yes, Bobby Ewing, of course.
That was a sort of Miss momentary Ellie. Blip there. Yes.
Who could ever forget Miss Ellie? I mean, clearly Dynasty was the glossier of the two. And if you're looking for the balance between were you Dallas or were you Camp Dynasty, clearly that was a whole area. Some people might have actually even said they were Camp Knots Landing, but that's a different one entirely.
Absolutely.
So you're listening to Sarah Huntley's Sound and Sarah's Vision, quite rightly so, and we're about to actually go into another selection of classic Americana, of course, based on The Honeymooners, featuring Wilma, Barney, Betty, and Fred. It's The Flintstones.
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. They're the modern Stone Age family.
Have a yabba 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 do time.
We'll have a gay old time. Sarah, is that something which you would have thought, wow, who would have thought that would have been interpreted in that particular way when you've got a brontosaurus steak and, of course, Dino, who goes yab, 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 and always collapses.
Very good, Alex.
Well, clearly a classic line there. And, of course, were you also pre-Pebbles and Bam Bam, or did you actually follow the Flintstones through their obvious offspring, Pebbles and Bam Bam?
Oh, I followed it through. I think anyone born in 1963 loved the Flintstones. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, and I still do.
No Flintstones, no Simpsons. Although the Simpsons, unlike the Flintstones, just goes on and on and on and on and on.
I think I prefer the cartoon of the Flintstones to the Simpsons. I know the Simpsons is very clever, but then that's a different generation, because I can remember my daughter when she was quite little saying, "Oh, Mummy, look, it's a Simpsons sky." And so therefore, yeah.
Exactly.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, a cycle hums, waiting to race to you. These days are ours.
Happy days.
These days are ours. Show them me. Back gray sky, hello blue. There's nothing can hold me when I hold you. Feels so right. It can't be wrong, rocking and rolling all week long.
Days. Monday, Tuesday, happy days. Yeah. Wednesday, Thursday, happy days. Were you taken with Cunningham, or were you more a Fonz girl?
Oh, I think I like Cunningham. And of course, when this was on, they were all in the series of just a bit older than us, and it's what you aspire to. I suppose it's what people watching Friends 10 years ago would feel the same. And I just thought they were really trendy.
Although it was based in the 1950s. So there it was, a series of the 1970s, looking back to the 1950s, featuring as Richie Cunningham, of course, somebody who would become one of Hollywood's top directors, Ron Howard.
Yes. But I think it was terribly funny, Happy Days. And it just a fun thing, and it made you feel good, and it made you think very positively about things. And I think we need more. I think we just need more of that. People just laughing. Like, I've just come back from Barry Island today, and everyone's in the sun having fun, and just joyful. And those programmes, it's not some deep meaning. It's just people having fun and sharing time together, which is happy.
And of course, two very famous spin-offs from Happy Days. Can you name either of them?
Oh, no.
Laverne and Shirley being one, and of course Mork and Mindy being the other, with Robin Williams
Mork
and Pam
Mindy.
Dorber.
I didn't realise that was a spin-off from that. Oh, Mork and Mindy. Yes, that's another classic, isn't it, Mork and Mindy?
Mork from Ork made his debut as Robin Williams in an episode of Happy Days.
There you go. And sadly no longer with us.
So from Happy Days to another theme, which is obviously keeping the Vic Mizzi theme going. And I presume you're actually looking for the vocalized version of the Kooky and the Spooky, Mysteriously Ooky, They're All Together, Kooky, the Addams Family.
They're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. Their house is a museum, when people come to see them, they really are a scream, the Addams Family. Neat, sweet, petite. So get a witch's shawl on, a broomstick you can crawl on. We're gonna pay a call on the Addams Family.
Well, the Addams Family is just fantastic. I think it's brilliant. I mean, I suppose the idea originally must have come from Frankenstein, the monsters, but I just...
Well, no, Charles Adams was a cartoonist, and it was his creation of the Adams Family, which was a strip cartoon, I believe, in one of the New York papers, that was then adapted in television form as the Adams Family. And it did echo a whole range of other things, but that was where the Munsters, which of course was a sister series, was much more based on the old Universal Munsters of Herman Munster and Lily Munster and so on. And they were contemporaries for a time, although the Adams Family seems to have had just a tad more longevity, perhaps because of John Astin as Gomez and Just Don't Speak French, because that could set off all manner of things, as Morticia would find on a regular basis.
Yes, yes. No, we all love this series. I think anybody that hasn't seen it ought to have a look on YouTube at it. They really should.
So we've spoken to Arthur Weingarten, who's written for the Addams Family, of course, Cousin It, being, of course, a classic soul. We mentioned Morticia, played by Carolyn Jones. My favourite, I think, has to be Ted Cassidy's incarnation of Lurch, primarily because there are so many days one wakes up and one simply wants to go,
Well, you learned that this morning, Alex.
One likes to put on the appropriate sort of guys for the appropriate sort of line. But of course, Jackie Coogan, who portrayed Uncle Fester with his tendency to light up light bulbs by popping them in his mouth, was also a classic of his time from that point of view.
Absolutely.
Who was your favourite Adamses? Or was it Pugsley? Was it Wednesday and Pugsley?
I think I like Morticia, actually. I did go to several fancy dress parties trying to be Morticia.
Oh, it was the shuffle that you need. You needed to have a shuffle to actually work through that. Let's move down the line to once upon a time, there were three little girls who went to a police academy. But I took them away from all that. Not me, obviously, but Mr. Charles Townsend in an act that these days would be regarded as borderline hashtag Me Too. So he couldn't take them away from all that at all. Why have you gone for this particular incarnation? And again, can you name the first three Charlie's Angels?
Oh, it will come to me when you say their names. No.
We had Kelly Garrett, Jill Munro, and Sabrina Duncan.
Well, this was the time of the fringe flick, wasn't it? And
Farrah flick.
Farrah
Fawcett.
Yes. But we were all having that sort of 70s big hair at the time. And it was a very iconic thing for people of my age to try and be.
So were you more Farrah Fawcett or Jill Munro, or were you more Cheryl Ladd as Chris Munro, who, of course, came on board after Farrah Fawcett left the series after just the first season?
The sad thing is, Alex, I wasn't any of them. I definitely wasn't. This was the time of the rah-rah skirt as well, which was not for me either. I have footballer's legs. No, but you can dream. I did try flicking my fringe a bit. Yes. This was the time of the... It's so associated, all these things, with clothes when you look at people, what they had. So this was jumpsuits, wasn't it, with the padded shoulders?
Well, they would do that. They would also be the episode Angels in Chains, where they'd actually be disguised as prison officers. They'd be air hostesses. They'd be taking on board all manner of undercover activities to actually sort out the miscreants. And, of course, they never actually met Charles Townsend. They only could work through the intermediary of Bosley, of course.
That's right. Yes, and then there'll be like telephone phone calls, wouldn't there, or a secret message left? And yes,
it would be the answer phone, the speaker phone that we'd actually have, an early use of the speaker phone.
And that was terribly with it, wasn't it? Speaker phone. My goodness me.
And of course, a connection between Charlie's Angels and a show we've already considered so far, Dynasty.
It will be somebody that was in both, and I tell you, I can't tell you, but you do.
Well, the actor who portrayed Blake Carrington was the same actor who portrayed who was the voice of Charles Townsend. I believe John Forsyth, if memory serves. I just wanted to confirm on that. So there you go. Just proving that there was life after being the voice of the Angela telephone. And of course, there were a couple of movies, or in fact, I think there have been three movies that have followed with Charlie's Angels, one of which featured Drew Barrymore as one of the three Charlie's Angels. And there are lots of sort of things that went on over the five seasons that the whole thing proceeded in the 70s, including obviously the incarnation of Tanya Horek and Shelley Hack. Tanya Roberts, I'd say. Tanya Roberts, who also sort of took on board the mantle of the Angels. They always seem to replace the sort of the blonde. Blondes seem to be replaced, really. I mean, Jill Munro and Kelly Garrett, or Sabrina Duncan, I should say. Sabrina Duncan and Kelly Garrett seem to stay pretty much fixtures for the whole sort of season, basically.
So, Alex, I'm sure everybody listening would want to know, who is your favourite Charlie's Angel?
Probably Kelly Garrett. Or possibly Chris Munro, one of those two, either Cheryl Ladd or Jacqueline Smith. We're moving on now to what happened to Charlie's Angels when they grew up. They became the Golden Girls. And this is a theme which, of course, Andrew Gold, I think, had a hit with called Thank You for Being a Friend.
I just think this is such a funny series. And if I grow old, I am old, but if I grow old like them, I'll be very happy. I think I'm probably most like the dippy one, Rose.
Short and sweet, but it's brought us to another short and sweet line. And in fact, we've just actually heard it because we had a back-to-back with a series that had one name in Britain and another name in the United States. What was that series, Sarah?
Show me up. I don't know.
Well, in Britain, the BBC being very firmly set against advertising, could not possibly call Top Cat Top Cat. So despite the fact that the theme actually talks consistently about Top Cat, and in the whole episodes themselves, he's consistently referred to as TC and Top Cat, every time the BBC would actually introduce this series, they would say, well, coming up, it's another edition of Boss Cat. So they would call it Boss Cat in Britain, whereas, of course, its regular name in the States was Top Cat. They referred to it as Boss Cat in the BBC because they didn't want to be seen to be advertising cat food.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Sticking to plastic time. It confused me no end as a child. Why is it they're referring to the series as Boss Cat, whereas the theme is all about Top Cat and everything that's actually there is Top Cat, and yet they introduce it, the continuity announcer would always say, and now coming up another episode of Boss Cat.
It's ridiculous. Because actually the theme tune is going, Top Cat, blah, 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 blah. Ridiculous. I didn't know that. Well, it's... This little walk through TV American themes with you, Alex, is mellowing me into this evening of thinking all the irritations that happen today at work with bureaucracy are just as laughable as Boss Cat to Top Cat, quite honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. Somebody will have actually said, no, you can't possibly actually refer to the series as Top Cat. You must brand it as Boss Cat. Well, they could do that, obviously, but they couldn't then change the entire series. Otherwise, it wouldn't be the series. Still, never mind. Yeah. As I said, the days when in Blue Peter you could only refer to sellotape as sticky back plastic because you couldn't actually have a brand in there. Things have changed in the BBC, I believe. Let's move on to a strange series, which many people actually say is still even strange today, because who did actually kill Laura Palmer? Or indeed...
Oh, I have this one for you, because I know you like this series, didn't you?
It's an extraordinary mix and development of, indeed, Kyle MacLachlan as Special Agent Dale Cooper with Damn Good Cherry Pie. Of course, it's the theme to Twin Peaks. Thank you. So from Twin Peaks, we're still working our way through with Sarah Huntley. And I think it's brought us neatly round to Roots, Kunta Kinte. Well,
this was such a big explosion, wasn't it?
Alex Haley, Sunday yeah. Nights, American miniseries with Lorne Greene, not in his role as Ben Cartwright of Bonanza, but in a completely different role. And something which I think certainly did raise the profile, and rightly raise the profile, of the experience of the non-white and the African-American and the whole history of African-Americans in both antebellum America, post-America, and indeed that whole story, as it's Alex Haley's tale, as to the present day.
Well, I think it's a very significant series, and I hope that people still think it's politically correct now, because, as you say, I think it did. It was a fantastic drama. It was about someone's struggle and life, which was true, and also was also very, I suppose, for people that haven't really thought about the actual background and the storylines behind that bit of history. I thought it was extremely well done, and I didn't think it sentimentalized or got things wrong personally. Probably find it's out of date now, somebody would complain about it, but I actually think that it was very good.
From Roots and LeVar Burton, of course, who of course went on to be Geordi LaForge in Star Trek: The Next Generation, we come to the conclusion, and we haven't actually mentioned any of Sarah's friends, who normally actually sort of send in all manner of bits and pieces via Facebook. They've been very quiet recently, so hopefully they're either happy or they've just nodded off and they've just gone to sleep somewhere. I don't know, maybe they're watching the TV themes and so on. But do you have any dedications you'd like to just put out at this moment in time, Sarah Huntley, before we actually say goodnight, everybody?
Good night, Mary Ellen. Well, just to all my friends, that I hope they will enjoy listening to this, and it will give them a trip down memory lane, and that all my friends on Facebook, I think, will agree that some of these themes of music, regardless of the programme, suddenly take you to a place that you were in your life at that moment in time.
Sadly, the request for Starsky and Hutch, once again, didn't quite make the cut. That's okay.
The people clearly will be cross about that. But I think I tried to give a broad spectrum of American TV themes. So hopefully there's something.
No Star Trek either.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I should have done. Actually, there'll be a lot of my friends, Andrew Forbes, and a lot of Star Trek people who will be very cross with me about that. So I'm very sorry. Bean them up, Scotty. I'm so sorry.
But of the ones we've listened to, Little House on the Prairie, Charlie's Angels, The Waltons, Dallas, Flintstones, Happy Days, The Addams Family, Top Cat, Twin Peaks, The Golden Girls, Roots, or what we're about to listen to, and indeed Hawaii Five-O. Which one would you say is your top American theme tune?
I think it would be The Waltons, because I love that series, because in The Waltons, there was always a conclusion and a little bit of a moral to each one of those episodes. And I think it showed family life in a very good way. I think, and actually, Alex, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What other series did John Boy go on to do after The Waltons? What famous father did he play in another children's series that was mentioned a week or so ago?
I mean, obviously, that's a classic line on that, because we're referring, of course, to the Waltons, which I have really just upon my person there. Mm-hmm. The season, which is actually the fourth season, the one in which in 1936, Hitler and Mussolini threatened the world. King Edward gave up the English throne for love. Gangbusters is on the radio and a movie crew hires John Boy as a scriptwriter. Mary Ellen applies to nursing school. Jim Bob discovers a shocking fact about his birth and a fire drives the Waltons from their home. Do you remember that 24 episode, season four? Lots of things were happening there. I can't remember, actually. What did Richard Thomas actually go on to star with in?
Well, he went on to do a series of Robinson Crusoe. Oh, no, Swiss Family Robinson. Sorry, what is the matter with my brain? He went on to do Swiss Family Robinson.
He was a castaway on an island some way, shape or form.
Yes,
so there we are.
He went on to do that with my friend Margot Garton, playing his wife. And so she's never quite got over having him as her husband.
And there was I thinking it was a case of he was in the Roger Corman movie version of Battle Beyond the Stars. Clearly, that's another John Boy. Good night, Sarah.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
We'll be right back.